Hey aviators, welcome to another Motivation Monday. It's great to have you here. And today we're going to have a shorter session because I am leaving Alaska for 3 months tomorrow morning. And we are going to be traveling all over. We're going to be going to Salt Lake and Las Vegas to visit family. Then I'll be spending a couple months down in Southern California, Ventura County in particular. And then Florida for Sun and Fun, Texas for some collaboration with Aviation 101, Josh Flowers. So lots in that time frame that I'll be doing, lots of content coming, but I'm trying to get one last episode done here with my beautiful background lighting that I've created recently. But Motivation Monday is for aviation training, aviation careers, flight training, maneuvers, questions you have as a community, as an individual even, about something you're struggling with in aviation or something you want a little bit more information on. So coming from a certified flight instructor myself, I can share that information through here. I take these questions through Instagram. I ask every Sunday night what questions you guys have. So please go there each Sunday evening if you have any questions Monday morning and ask those questions, and I'll be happy to answer them on Monday. And so here's this episode. You can go back and also check out the previous episodes. Please subscribe, like, and remember that you can also go down in the comments and communicate. And you can also see the description where you can search the different questions that are answered in this particular Motivation Monday. So enjoy it, and I will see you guys in there. Are there well-paying aviation jobs that allow you to be home with your family every night? I would say that if you're wanting to be home with your family every night, kind of doing more of a 9-to-5 aviation job, you're going to be probably in the lower paying range of aviation jobs. Airlines obviously have their own schedules and you build up through your seniority. So this is definitely an area where you're going to make some sacrifices. Now, for me, I actually decided myself that this was something that was very important to me to see my kids grow up and to be with my family. I think there are plenty of families that do well in aviation, even with the schedule. I think it just depends on how you do things as a couple and how you make things work to where you can do the airlines or other forms of that it's not 9-to-5 and do just fine. But it just takes quality work together to get that to work. However, I'm a flight instructor. That's definitely a good 9-to-5 type of thing you could do. It might even be a little bit more flexible with that, where maybe you have flexibility during the days with your family, but then at nighttime, in the evening when people get off work and can do their flight training, you can work then. So there is some flexibility there, but you do have more of a home base. So I would say that in aviation overall, there's definitely this way that you can kind of shape your career however you want it. There's plenty of opportunities in aviation. You may not be a pilot per se, but you may have some other aspects that you're bringing into it. But pure pilot jobs, it is pretty hard to get the 9-to-5 type of job, although it is not impossible. Going into the military, do you suggest commercial, have 135 hours and about to get instrument? I'm not entirely sure what the best path would be for the military. Obviously, the military will pay for a lot of your training, but they also will probably look well upon you already having flying hours, and it'll give you a leg up on those that are in flight school as well or whatever with you that don't have any idea what to do. So I would say it kind of depends, but in terms of what I know, military flying is way different than civilian flying. So there will be a lot of crossover just because airplanes fly how airplanes fly, but there's also going to be a lot different in how everything works. So I don't know. That's a toss up. I would probably ask a military pilot that rather than me, but it is definitely something that I think could help. Just kind of depends on what type of flying you're going into. Transitioning to a new airplane in the middle of private pilot training, good or bad? I would say I'm pretty indifferent on this. It really depends on the type of airplane. I think if you're going to go from something that's a basic trainer, like say a Cherokee 140 or a Cessna 172 and go up to a 182 that has a constant speed and some more performance, then yeah, you're going to be dealing with a lot more. And that could be a bit of a leap. But I would also say that, you know, airplanes fly the way they fly, and you can always learn in that type of plane, it might just take more hours to do it. And I know plenty of people that have learned to fly like in a 182 or something larger that is a complex airplane. So it just depends. And it might take more hours, but it is what it is. And if that's what you choose to do, that's totally fine. I'm almost done with my commercial license. Then we'll start my multi-IFR. So I'm thinking to get my university degree while you're going through training or while you're continuing that. So this is a common question of whether to get your training at like a university or get it through a local flight school. And I really like the path of getting your degree separately from your flight training. Flight training ends up being a little bit faster that way, ends up being cheaper that way. And then you can be employable faster and still have your degree by doing something like that. I know of people that had even worked in an aviation job while they're still going to college, working as a CFI. So that's another good way to do it, to actually support yourself as a pilot. You're building hours, but you're still in college. So that's a great way of doing it. What are your thoughts on flying corporate versus regional to build time for majors? You know, it's interesting because I think that for the most part, majors are going to look upon like crew time and actual airline time a little bit more favorably than they would like single pilot time in the corporate world. That's not to say that you can't make the leap from one to the other. So I think it kind of depends. You've got to evaluate your options here. I think the great thing about the corporate world is you're going to get a different view on aviation than you're ever going to get in the airlines. And so what you learn there is something different than just being in the airline mindset your entire career. And I think there are some advantages to that, just to have a bit of a different twist on your experience and have a different feel. Because what if you were always in the airlines, say regionals, and then moving up to majors, and maybe it's just not for you, but you never really have that taste of a different type of job. So what if really your heart is in the corporate world? So I would say that trying both would be a good thing, but also that the majors look upon actual airline time more favorably than they would the corporate time. I know friends that are corporate pilots that have technically way more hours than the regional pilots, but the regional pilots get hired rather than them. So there's a bit of a disparity there between the two, but just think more holistically, big picture on shaping your career and what that could mean. If your eventual goal, and you know that your eventual goal is to fly in the majors, it's probably best to go through the airlines or through the regionals. Is going for commercial instrument rating, you recommend buying a plane? You know, I get this question a lot, and I think it really depends on how much of a barrier you want to set up for yourself. So for an example, a really quick story is I had two students last year. They were both on track, basically the same time, moving the same pace toward getting their license. One of them got bogged down in the thought of buying an airplane and completely stopped his training because of it. The other one continued his training and got to becoming a private pilot. Okay. That's when he bought an airplane, in that transition between private pilot finishing his training and being rated as a private pilot. He made it all the way. The guy that stopped flying is no longer flying right now from what I understand. So make sure it doesn't derail you. It's a whole different subject to approach buying an airplane, because you got to be very careful and make sure you're not buying a lemon, and you got to do pre-buys and all sorts of stuff. In terms of affordability, absolutely. It's a fantastic way to make your training very cheap to get there, but it can also be a burden for people that kind of stops them in their tracks, in their progress, and prevents them from moving forward. So that's kind of my advice there is, yes, it is a good way to do it, but it can also derail you from progress, from actually making progress moving forward. Hope that makes sense. Good question. Thoughts on the Tailbeacon, Wing Beacon versus something like a GTX 335 for cheap ADS-B solutions? Personally, I have a Stratus ADS-B transponder. I really like it. It is solid. It works really well. It's definitely kind of middle of the road in terms of what's out there for ADS-B solutions, but I really like it. It does a great job and works quite well. That said, I think we're in a time now where those that have delayed getting their ADS-B transponder mandate done are typically those that are very cost conscious. And I would say that whatever you're going to do, find a way to do it and move forward. And there are plenty of solutions out there that are fairly affordable to do. So I like the idea of the tail beacons, the wing beacons, et cetera. I think that's a creative idea to get that done. I do like the extra things that I get with our ADS-B transponder because the Stratus gives you an AHARS, which actually then gives me synthetic vision through ForeFlight and a bunch of other tools as well. So, you know, that's giving me a lot more information than simply living up to the mandate. So you've got to balance that as well. If this is a time to make that leap and maybe upgrade the technology in your cockpit a little bit, that may be a good way to go. Personally, I like what I've done. I feel like it's middle of the road and it's good. And again, my transponder, the one I use, go check it out, is a Stratus ESGi. I do get this question probably weekly when I do these Motivation Mondays. And what is your long-term goal? My long-term goal is right here doing what I'm doing, creating aviation content for the community that they can use and that can help them move forward. I make money from doing ground school and check ride preparation courses that you can find at angleofattack.com. That's how you can support me and this company and our mission. But really, this is what I love to do. I love to teach. I have a small flight school here in Homer, Alaska that I teach real people. I don't teach a ton of students. I'm not totally busy with my flight school because I have the online thing as well. It's a pretty good split, but I love teaching real people. I love seeing real people make leaps and bounds in aviation and also inspiring and encouraging people to move forward. So I try to make content that's easy to digest, modern, looks good. And I'm doing that with the backdrop of Alaska. And I think it's working out pretty well. So this is my plan. I enjoy being an instructor, an educator, and I hope to help you guys along and be part of this journey together. Okay, this is a really good question and a very important thing to find. So as someone who has no contacts, how do I find a mentor within general aviation? And I actually just did a podcast that I'm going to be releasing within the next couple days. And it's titled How to Get Back into Aviation. Basically, if you fall out of aviation, how to get back into it and get moving forward. A major part of that podcast, my podcast is called Aviator Cast, is finding a mentor and connecting yourself to the local community and actually going and talking to people. And really, there's no way to avoid it. We as pilots, we're all basically adult age, okay? And we need to be adults about approaching people at our local airport, finding out who's who, making connections, going to different clubs and meetings and organizations and training seminars, et cetera, and meet people. And you will find those mentors through that process, okay? Now, that's not always something that is just in person, although I will emphasize it is so important you get over your fear and your shyness and you do that in person. But it can also be done digitally. It can be done digitally through social media to find mentors there. I will say that the best way to do it is in person. Those are the type of people that can line up flying experiences potentially, and eventually you've got to go that way. But you know, do everything you can to reach out and grow your network. And that's how you can make it work. And please don't make excuses that you simply have no contacts. I'm not saying that's your problem. That's just you stating a fact. But go out and reach out and get to know people. And that's how you're going to make it work. I do get a lot of questions about flying jobs in Alaska. And here's one. Are low time jobs in Alaska easy to come by? I've been doing research, but can't really find much. You know, there are a lot of people that want to fly in Alaska. The jobs here are quite competitive. You've got to have good experience and you've got to be like a hardy outdoor type of person to survive here. And I think that it's kind of the intangibles that these companies look for. Do you have a tough mindset where you can survive like the Alaskan lifestyle and you'll stay here for a number of years if they invest in you. Those are the types of pilots they seem to reach out for. The jobs like Raven or Hägglund, they are highly competitive. And even friends that I know that have been in aviation here for a long time, have thousands of hours, even for them, it's competitive. So I would say, yes, there are low-time jobs if you're willing to do instructor jobs and some other type of jobs, but it is quite competitive, and you will be expected to be kind of a survivalist in a way where you can survive life in Alaska. That's something big that they look for here. I really don't know how else to say it, but it really is those intangible things that they look for. They really look for fit more than your qualifications. I've had a couple of pilots recommend getting commercial after private pilot and before instrument to be able to make some money. That's an interesting one. I guess I've never heard it phrased that way, to actually make some money. Here's the thing though, if you're gonna get your commercial pilot license at the minimum of 250 hours, there's a lot to burn there between the minimum hours for private pilot, which is 40 hours, and the minimum hours for commercial Part 61, which is 250 hours. So you're talking 210 hours there that you've got to basically build time. Where instrument is nice to get done in that time frame is you're actually building the time and getting something done out of the way to build toward that 250 hours. So while it may be true that you could build 250 hours, get a commercial job, and use that to go toward your instrument, I feel like it's better to struggle through it and get your instrument done as well. And so you're hireable at 250 hours with your instrument rating as well. So you don't have those limitations on your license. Interesting question. Ever flown a Warbird? If not, anything in the works? I was able to fly with the Aeroshell team at AirVenture in Oshkosh last year, and it was amazing. They were in formation. They did a couple aerobatic maneuvers, and it was really cool. Really, really cool. I never really considered even what something like 4Gs would feel like. And it was amazing. Had a really good time. Actually put up a YouTube video of that online. You can go check that out. But very cool experience. I flew in That's All Brother, which was in the main wave of the invasion on Normandy, was the first DC-3 ahead of that wave. There was a wave the night before, so technically it wasn't the first, but in the main invasion force, it was the first one to go in. I was able to fly on that at AirVenture as well. Very, very cool experience. Flew on a Beach 18 once, which was very cool. And also an original T6 SNJ. How easy is it to get your complex and high performance rating? Very simple. Takes a number of hours. Really isn't that complicated. That's why it's more of an endorsement rather than a rating. It is an endorsement. So your instructor can sign off on that. Really quite simple to actually go through that. Guys, I think I'm going to leave it here. I will try to answer your questions separately if I can find some more time today. Again, I'm leaving for 3 months tomorrow morning with my family. We're leaving from Alaska to go visit family and get outside before the busy flying season in the summertime. So if you want more questions, if you want to see more of this type of content, please go to YouTube. You'll find these Motivation Mondays on there. I've done two or three of them already. I'm planning on being committed to this every Monday. And last week's will be posted basically today. So I do have one to post for today. I'll do that. And then this one you'll find next week on YouTube. But go there, subscribe, stay in touch, keep asking those questions. I'll do my best to get in there and answer your questions just directly to you. Since I couldn't do it here live, I'll try to chip away at that off air. But I appreciate you guys being here. If there's anything I can ever do for you, please don't hesitate to write me and ask me a question. It helps me stay sharp as an educator, and I can potentially help you move forward. Again, thanks for being here. Please share the message of Angle Attack. Share this with your aviation friends out there that you think it might be helpful for. And I will see you guys next time. Until next time, throttle on.